Hi, my name is Fran Brown. I'm a managing partner at Stack & Lou. With me, I have Rob Reagan.
I'm a senior security associate at Stack & Lou, and we're a company that helps IT organizations secure their businesses.
Yeah. And this is Tenacious Diggity. If you guys are looking for FX, we pulled a switch with him. We're looking to get all of his fans and make some new fans ourselves. So this is Tenacious Diggity. Ready to rock your socks off?
How hard it rocks on a scale of 1 to 10. Yeah.
Quick question. How many people up here have seen some of the talks that we've given before on previous versions?
Cool. Thanks for coming back. We got a lot of new stuff.
Yeah. Cool. So with that, I'm going to jump right into a demo just to let you guys know, kind of set the pace for what we're looking to do here. It seems like a handful of people have seen some of our talks before. It seems like most people are newcomers. But basically, these Diggity tools, arsenal tools that we've released, are a number of search engine hacking tools that use Google, Bing, and various other search engines in interesting ways for search engine hacking. We're going to see. So we have Google Diggity, which is what you would think of as a traditional Google hacking type tool, but upgraded to all the latest APIs and things like that. And we have Bing Diggity, which is what you would think of as a Bing equivalent of a Bing hacking tool or of a Google hacking tool. But that's really not what we're going to focus on today. We're going to focus on all new attack tools that we have. And what we've continued to do besides just Google and Bing hacking is what other ways can we utilize different search engines or existing search engines and weird features of them and new and interesting ways to find vulnerability information or, you know, find sensitive information disclosures. So this first video is going to be of Code Search Diggity, which the new version of Search Diggity, which is the tool we see up here right now, is the main attack tool, which contains all other tools that we have for our Diggity attack tools.
Right. These are all categorized under open source intelligence gathering. And that's to find information using freely available sources and produce actionable intelligence on it. So we're looking not just at the general search engines that are available, but also specialized search engines, and one of those being Google Code Search. So we're just going to show an example of what we can do with a specialized search engine like Google Code Search, just give you a better understanding of what our tools are used for.
Yeah. And those of you guys who are familiar with Google Code Search in general know that it went away a few months ago, but as of the latest release, we found some workarounds, and it's back in 3.0, which is available for download on our website now.
Google Code Search reborn.
Reborn. Back from the dead. Yeah. Those of you who are not familiar with Google Code Search is another Google product, just like Gmail or, you know, something along those lines, that originally was designed to allow people to have full regular expression search capability over every open source code project.
Things like GitHub, CodePlex, SourceForge, and Google's own freely available Subversion repositories. Mm-hmm. And we found that developers often put sensitive information in their code, and maybe they're an independent contractor and they're using those free resources to manage their code for their clients. We can also utilize regular expressions against a search engine like that to find vulnerabilities, like simplistic examples of SQL injections or cross-site scripting or other web application vulnerabilities.
So this first demo that I'm about to play right now is what we like to call taking over someone's Amazon cloud in 30 seconds or less. So what we're going to be doing here, you see I have the Code Search interface up. I'm just going to go ahead and check a number of regular expressions that we have set up to find Amazon EC2 keys embedded in people's open source code projects.
And for those of you that don't know, EC2 keys are like the keys to the castle of an elastic cloud service provided by Amazon. This can be things like S3 storage for storing large amounts of data or files, or it can also be for the actual admin keys to manage that elastic cloud. That means that's the interface where you can put up new servers or take down servers. And of course, if an attacker were able to get access to these keys, they could put up new servers on someone else's dime, or they could find sensitive information potentially exposed in their S3 storage.
So we see here in this Google Code Project EC2 sample in the file statetest.java, someone has went ahead and embedded their Amazon EC2 keys. their access key and their secret key. So Rob said is pretty much the equivalent of your username and password to be able to access someone's Amazon cloud. So we're just going to take that and using a Firefox plugin called S3Fox Organizer, we're just going to plug in this access key and secret key that we got out of somebody's statetest.java, some random test file. Add, and now we have access to their Amazon S3 cloud storage. To verify that we actually had it, we downloaded a single file, EC2 server.txt, literally the first file we downloaded. Open that up, and we see a text file by a developer of administrator credentials, database administrator credentials, VPN administrator credentials. Literally, yeah. You would think this is too good of an example that like I probably like combed through them for days. This was literally the first file I ever downloaded in this manner, and it just worked out that way. So it was, you know.
Right. Developers don't think people are going to have access to their source code. They hard code all kinds of secret secret keys and secret data in there, and that also goes for developers that are putting things out on these freely available code repositories, not thinking that they're being indexed by search engines and easily searchable.
So in this video, we're going to see another thing again. We similar searches, a few keys embedded here. But this time, we're going to use a tool called, another free tool called ElasticFox. Open that up, create a new instance with this, again, this Amazon access key and secret key. But this time, instead of just their file storage, we're actually going to take over their entire EC2 instance. Click go. And then we pull up, we see that we're now connected, and we see that they actually have one virtual server running that we can administer at this point, a number of images up that are available to run. And at this point, we're just, because one developer embedded in some random open source code project and some random file that they thought no one would ever look at, their Amazon keys, we now can take full control of their Amazon EC2 instance and fire up our own virtual servers, yep. Take over theirs. Do whatever we want at this point.
A large organization probably isn't going to notice a few more servers added to their cloud, and there you go, hackers, free computing power. That's something that we've seen in our client source code as we've done code reviews, and really the protection against this is a lot of these public cloud providers now do allow you to lock down those keys to have a minimalist set of permissions, and so that's really the recommendations to developers is only purpose this key for one server. Only purpose it for one use, and don't hard code those keys that have complete admin control over the cloud or over the storage in your code. Those need to be really closely guarded secrets.
Yep. So we just like to start out with that because it kind of gives you an idea of besides just a slightly updated, better version of Google or Bing Hacking Tools, some of the new directions that we're trying to take things in terms of other search interfaces out there that we can leverage to. In interesting ways for hacking.
Yeah, we only think that search engine innovation is going to continue to explode over the coming years. There's going to be more and more competition out there. There's going to be more and more highly purposed search engines, and we want to utilize those for attack purposes and defense purposes.
Yeah. So we're really quickly just going to go through and show you just a list of some of the tools we've done in the past. But then move right on to all entirely new tools that are on the 3.0 version that was uploaded to our website as of like an hour ago. Those of you who want to read about the old tools, can check out the videos from last year.
Yeah, just to reiterate that all this, everything we're showing is for free on our website, stackloo.com.
Yeah. So those of you not familiar with our project, it's the Google Hacking Diggity project. It's a project where we release a number of free search engine hacking tools, kind of broken up by attack tools and defensive tools. Our defensive tools, which we're not going to spend too much time on today, primarily rely on Google Alerts and other alerting and RSS capabilities to feed us real-time updates from Google and Bing and Shodan and other search engines as Google finds a new website that would have matched some Google dork. We're getting real-time RSS updates about it and have created a sort of intrusion detection system for Google hacking, if you will.
And we'll show you some updates we've made to that.
Some of the old tools, I mentioned earlier that Google Diggity and Bing Diggity, it's traditional Google and Bing hacking tools. We have Flash Diggity, which is a Adobe Flash security scanning tool, which leverages Google and Bing to find SWIFT files out there, bulk download them, bulk decompile them back to their action script, and then bulk look through them for Adobe Flash vulnerabilities.
So we're penetration testers, and we tried to design these tools with penetration testers in mind. We wanted to be able to target multiple sites at once. We wanted to be able to download and export the results to CSV files. We wanted to be able to gather all the information that we need as part of the footprinting phase, and really it's the step one of any penetration test.
Our DLP Diggity tool, which I really encourage people to try, I went out and took every data loss prevention tool that I could find, and I stole all their regexes for social security numbers and credit cards and things like that, and compiled a master list of regular expressions that will look through files for interesting data. And this allows you to bulk, go out and find thousands of documents, you know, download all of them, and then look through them for credit cards and passwords and social security numbers.
We'll see what that looks like.
But that's all the old tools. I want to get right into some of the new tools that I want to show you today that we just released. And with that, we're going to go right into the first one. With but even before we get into that, one thing to note: until this version, we had hooked up the Bing API for Bing Diggity and the Google Custom Search API for Google. But now that Bing is moving to a pay model and just to get the number of results that we really want, we've implemented across all of the attack tools scraping of Google, which was no easy task. I spent quite a bit of time trying to make it so that you can do thousands and thousands of queries against Google scraping and effectively. And we built that into the actual engine for all the tools now. So it's all completely free. You don't have to sign up
for
the APIs.
We found that API key to not be adequate, and now across all the tools, we can scrape Google effectively and get tens of thousands of results in a few hours, which is the only search engine hacking tool that can do that right now.
Yep. And we've done it for Bing as well. And you know, previously you'd have to sign up for a Google API key, and you know, you'd get max like 70 something results per search.
We wanted
getting
more.
1,000. Yeah, we want it for free, and we want to get 1,000 results. And one of the interesting things as well is that we actually have the ability to scrape the custom search engine interface. So you can actually get 1,000 results from a custom search engine of Google that you built. So all the benefits and none of the drawbacks. And this is just kind of giving you an idea of an overview of some of the things we're doing in terms of taking your queries, spreading them across hundreds of proxies, and spreading those across, you know, dozens of Google servers. And different settings and dropping cookies and things like that to try to avoid bot detection.
Yeah, so we did all the legwork and the research on how to what query string parameters you need to send and how to best make your scraping look like a human as to prevent Google detecting you as a bot, and put that in this suite across all the attack tools.
Yeah. So you can manually import proxies and things like that, or we tried to make it as simple as possible. You can just open up this options proxies, do auto find. We go out and scrape a bunch of proxy sites for you and click test, and it'll test if they're fast and, you know, and not giving you garbage or inline ads or, you know, messing with the responses. Take care of all that for you, and it's you know, all seamless in terms of being able to spread all of your queries across tons of proxies.
Real quick, I was asked to mention that track 1 and 4 were switched, in case you didn't know.
Yeah. And depending on which one you're looking for, it's here.
Yeah.
And you can also manually specify the proxies here. So it just seems like some options configurations, but I can't tell you. I mean, this has really opened it up where you can now do Google and Bing for free. And instead of getting, you know, dozens of results, you can get hundreds of thousands of results very easily.
Right.
And
if you need a list of valid open HTTP proxies, I'd recommend going out to, there's tons of services like this that you can pay like $25 for a lifetime subscription to something like hidemyass.com. And get 1,500 known good open HTTP proxies emailed to you every day.
Yeah, email you text files every day, once a day, of, you know, the latest proxies.
And just import into this tool, and now you're effectively scraping Google and Bing.
So that being said, right into our first new attack tool, PortScan Diggity. So PortScan Diggity is kind of a really interesting tool that works on a feature of Google that is not documented and technically shouldn't even work, as far as I know. But what we're doing here is we're actually finding websites that are listening on non-standard TCP ports that Google has basically went out there and indexed, you know, all 65,000 some odd ports And I don't know exactly how or why they're doing this. We have a few theories. But you can effectively do passive port scanning instantly through Google. So, you know, with the advantages of being passive, you're not actually, you know, you're only talking with Google. You're not actually talking to your targets.
And yeah, I use this during scoping of engagements, actually, to try to see what other web servers are available out there, because I haven't actually touched the client sites yet, but I'm able to see these HTTP services that exist.
The other big event you can do by domains as well as by IP address ranges, and we see here on the right side, you see we pretty much are able to cut through an entire B class instantly, at least as far as what Google knows about in terms of what IPs and what open ports there are. And you see port, you know, 9998.
Yeah, that would take a lot longer if you're trying to use Nmap, right?
Yeah, months or, you know, depending on if you're trying not to get detected. But to scan an entire B class for a full port range. So this is kind of, I'll show you the tool in a second, but this is kind of to give you a background of how it's actually working. Not only can we just do the star and get a list of all websites listening on random ports, you can even specify exact port ranges. See 8,000 to 9,000 here and 5,000 to 6,000. Being able to just get a complete list. And one other thing, besides just being a port scan, when you think about this, every single one of these results, you see 216,000, 400,000 results. Almost every single one of these are some web administrative interface of some kind. So it's, and especially combined with the scraping that we have now, it's an effective way to get millions of web administrative interfaces listening on random ports
right.
out there.
The reason they're not on standard ports is they're not really meant to be found, right? Yeah. In like 5 minutes of playing with this tool, I found admin interface to a strip mall that accepts PayPal payments to buy products, and they had exposed on that admin interface the ability to add yourself as an admin user and then get in and review orders and shipping addresses and things like that. Like these are things that are not meant to be seen and generally have a lack of security around them.
Yeah. And it can be used for... I don't know if any of you guys saw in the news 2 weeks ago, I think it was, where they were somebody was selling O'Day for Plesk Panel web administrative interface that was out there. So we see there on the left just doing a quick search for, you know, port 8443 and getting 66,000 likely candidates for that are running some version of Parallels Plesk Panel management
right.
web interface.
This O'Day was literally like point at the admin interface and then through a vulnerability in the admin interface, get me the password to log in as full admin.
Yeah. So in an age where we're seeing, you know, like mass SQL injection attacks and massive scale attacks of, you know, compromising and using as malware distribution platforms, hundreds of thousands and millions of sites, this is a really easy way to go about doing something like that in terms of mass exploitation. But just to give you an idea of, so that's kind of how it works in theory, and to show you how the tool actually works, take advantage of it. We actually just created an interface here in our main tag tool. I click, I just put in com in the top right and click go. It finds for me every result that it can in terms of web interfaces listening on non-standard ports. And now I specify the 8443 just to target our Plesk panel, which I mentioned earlier. And now we could see, so we have the view of the actual raw results, the URLs and things like that. And then you can even switch over to more of like a port scan kind of result view and see a list of hosts that we found and a list of ports that were open on those hosts, effectively giving you how would you use this on your own? Let's say you were WellingtonFlorida.gov. I would plug in WellingtonFlorida.gov and let me check port 8000 to 9000. And we see it found two hosts, one with a website listening on 8080, one with one listening on 8443. So we can effectively cut through and do port scanning via Google now.
And then export the results out to CSV and load that up into Burp or whatever. Maybe you want to run some active web scanning on it. And but this was step one. You've identified all these admin interfaces that you can then manually go take a closer look at.
Cool. Any questions on that so far, or anything we went over so far? I've got 50 minutes. I want to show you guys.
Cool.
So just getting back into it. And so we see again a list of ports open for each host. So now, one of the more interesting new attack tools I want to go over, and something that really evolved out of a need that just kept coming up and coming up again. It's a not in my backyard diggity. Is one of our new attack tools. And just looking at the Verizon data breach investigation report from this past year, they kind of jokingly put out there that you know, perhaps we should create a new breach discovery classification of YouTube and Pastebin and Twitter, given all the raw amount of data dumps from compromises out there on Pastebin and things of that nature. Noting that a large percentage of people finding out that they've had an incident only comes once people brag about it on Twitter or dump all the emails and passwords on Pastebin or something of that nature.
Right, and that was partially the inspiration for Not In My Backyard, but also we saw the need from one of our clients that has hundreds of domains that they're responsible for, and they were being targeted by Lulzsec and Anonymous, and they said, you know, a lot of the stuff that we're seeing isn't necessarily an issue on our site. It's data that's being stolen and put on another site. How can we use search engines to find that? And that was really what brought about Not In My Backyard.
Yeah, so, I mean, we really wanted to make it as easy as possible for you to plug in your domain or your email or even your name as an individual, check a bunch of boxes and click go, and find your sensitive information all over the internet on third-party sites from cloud storage to Pastebin to wherever really easily to see if your personal information has been exposed on a third-party site you don't control. That is not in your backyard. So we see here a number of Pastebin leaks, just usernames and passwords being dumped on Pastebin. Also, some of the more interesting ones is individuals are starting to move over to use Dropbox and Google Drive and Microsoft SkyDrive and a number of other, you know, cloud-based storage, especially as people get iPads and iPhones and want to be able to easily hook that up with their cloud-based storage.
And employees are throwing confidential financial information in spreadsheets up on their Dropbox and then not realizing that Google may be indexing that. Or I see more and more people using Google Docs for managing sensitive information, not realizing that that's in Google's index.
And we just see a couple examples here of finding in Dropbox a completed tax form with people's personal information to full database dumps in SkyDrive to people's Cisco configuration. Files hosted in Google Docs, not realizing that these public folders are being indexed by Google and easily searchable. But one other interesting thing that we found, and this is kind of important, is that robots.txt is dead. Google is not abiding by robots.txt anymore. And if any of you guys, how many people here use Dropbox in any way? Decent amount of people. How many people have clicked the setting when prompted for the newer you know, I want to share all my photos via Dropbox that I take with my phone.
Yeah, right. You plug in your phone and it says, oh, yeah, upload all my photos that I've taken, right, and sync it with my Dropbox.
Yeah, so recently, especially for Apple devices, it's just a setting, and most people are turning it on by default now. As you take pictures with your phone, it's just automatically syncing to these galleries in Dropbox. And we see here in Dropbox's robots.txt that they're saying disallow this /gallery, which is where all those things are hosted. But just a quick look on Google, and we see 164,000 people's personal photos galleries have been indexed and are easily searchable.
So we know who's
via
been
Google.
Sexting.
Yeah, actually some really interesting personal photos out there. Probably spent a lot more time browsing through the photos than was really necessary for the, yeah.
It's research.
Yeah, it's research, honey. You know, I'm like, yeah. this is just yet again another place out there that people aren't realizing that. And in this case, it's, you know, they're thinking that Dropbox thinks they're safe in terms of people aren't indexing this and Google's just doing it anyway. So it's definitely a good recipe for being able to, you know, find the latest celebrities' nude photos that they want to send out on their phone all the time and, you know, things of that nature, or your photos. This is kind of part of just the data loss prevention side of it. Just looking for your information again out there. This was in the news last year, and there's been a million incidents since then. Seems like two a week now. But you know, just some Yale alumni just Googling for his own name stumbled across an Excel spreadsheet with 43,000 of Yale alumni's social security numbers and all their detailed personal info, and just in one Excel spreadsheet that was just hanging out there in the wind. I'm just Googling for his own name. He happened to stumble across it.
Right. So that's one of the beauties of Not In My Backyard is it can be used by an organization or by an individual for finding sensitive information disclosure.
Yeah. Would have been helpful for the Yale alumni to run this tool. So I'm going to pull up and show you guys this in a second, but just some of the default locations that we're looking for. We're basically going to be allowed easy to plug in a freeform text of your name, your email, a domain you're interested in, whatever you want to look for. Select from a list of locations, which we see up here, and then select from a list of certain files if you want to drill down on that, file types, as well as a select a number of keyword groups that narrow down and find more interesting information, like data dumps. But some of the places that we're looking in terms of locations are, we're looking for at files across. By default, if you leave them unchecked, it's just looking for your name and stuff across the whole internet, and what other filters you specify. But it, it allows you to easily narrow down and start looking in cloud-based storage, social networking, document sharing sites like Scribd, Pastebin, and every Pastebin type site.
Right. And again, we've made this with the pen tester in mind, or with the hacker in mind. So this is completely extensible, and you can actually just go to where this application installs, and these are all in text files and the carriage return line feed delineated text files. And you can add your own sites in there. You can add more locations. You can add your own queries that you want to run by default, and then just restart the application, and that information will be loaded into the interface.
Yep, and some of these are things you would never even think of. Like, well, some people know the Rate My Network diagram as a funny one, but in Gliffy, we're seeing people hosting extremely detailed internal network diagrams on Gliffy and sharing them out, and
Right, these are like online Visio applications, and people are just like putting their confidential or proprietary business workflows or their network diagram on there just to show off. It's kind of funny that a lot of IT administrators may be uploading their whole internal architecture to ratemynetworkdiagram.com and showing an attacker exactly what they would need to know and where to go once they get inside.
So what we see here is the tool, and we have, you would plug in up in the targets, your name, things like that, whatever you want to do. Then we have the locations tab. In this particular example, I'm just going to look on Pastebin only, but it'd be easy for you to just check all those boxes. In this case, since it's Pastebin, I'm not going to specify any file type, but it would allow you easily put, let me just look in Excel spreadsheets or database backup files or things like that. And then we're going to select the keywords for that are good for finding data dumps of personal information. Click. So we see that it comes back with some results from Pastebin. I'm just looking at this one here. We see Osiris owns Max Protech, and we see a few passwords and some headers here for Pastebin. So we go ahead and click that, and you see some data dump from some hacker that has hacked maxprotech.com. If any of you guys use maxprotech.com, you might want to go check that out. And we see here anyone who's bought anything off them, their names, their personal addresses, their email that they registered with, and the password that they used. So just as an example of how an individual would use this, besides just searching for everything, let's say that I was chuck.hsu at wiley.com. Is Chuck in the room by any chance? Sorry.
This Bing energy drink is almost as terrible as his password.
Yeah. Ying 318. So in this case, I would actually plug in, let me use quotes. So this is going to, it'll use quotes for both Google and Bing, or allow you to do in text, which works better for Google, or in body, which works better for Bing, depending on, and you could check all of them. So in this case, I'm just going to put quotes. So it's just going to look for Chuck HSU's at Wiley's email. And it's going to look across the things that I, across Pastebin for information disclosures.
Right. So we tried to make it as easy as possible for anyone to build these advanced queries to go out and retrieve this information and really prepackage a lot of the types of information that you'd want to look for and where you'd want to look for it so that you can get the results to the top of your results. Which is an issue when you're dealing with so much data in these search engine indexes.
Yeah, so you could see now if I was good old Chuck, I would have just plugged in my name and clicked all the check boxes, and it would have came back saying, hey, Chuck, some random site on Pastebin, because you bought equipment at Max Protech, there is a link, and you could see actually in the snippet of the results his email address and his password and personal information there. That's kind of out as an individual how you would use it. But you can plug in an email address, your name, domain, whatever you want to look for, and it makes it very easy to, if you don't select any location, it looks across the whole internet, you could select down by just Pastebin or cloud storage, whatever you're interested in, or certain file types, just Excel spreadsheets or CSVs. And then we have keywords that find patient records, personal information data dumps, to things that, and basically it's just combining every permutation of all these different kind of factors and searching Google and Bing for them for you, making it easy to find all of your personal information. And we see that here kind of pointed out. We got where to look, what kind of files to look in, keywords to help narrow down false positives, and you put your name or email or whatever up there.
And we'll be putting up videos of, to demonstrate how to use these tools, and so just check back on our website.
One other example just to show besides Pastebin, which is kind of an easy example that I just thought was great, is this time in the screenshots you see, we're looking in cloud storage. We're going to look for people who are throwing files up on their Amazon S3 cloud storage. We're going to be specifically looking at Excel spreadsheets, and I added the query appender, just the word password, and click go. We see a copy of user.xls it found, and just to see what that would have looked like through the web interface, what it's kind of simulating is we see just password, extension, Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, note the other worksheets there. This guy had basically all of his bank accounts, all of his bills, all of his other services, his tax information account, and his investments, his FAFSA, healthcare, you name it, all in one spreadsheet.
His PIN for his ATM card. I mean, this guy had everything in one Excel spreadsheet. And this is just one guy. And if this is if you are also in the room, I apologize. I did black out the information. This is just yet another. This is just like the Yale Excel spreadsheet with all their personal information. People just Googling for their own name or just stumbling across hundreds of thousands of personal records and credit cards, you know, without even trying by accident. And we're seeing this in the news like twice a week now, it seems like, where some major person has been compromised or is just throwing an Excel spreadsheet out there somewhere with hundreds of thousands of emails and passwords, where you almost become numb to even looking at the news headlines. It doesn't even say 100,000 results or more. I don't even bookmark this news story.
It's just so many.
Yeah. So, any questions so far? So the question was for the Google Docs and the Amazon S3 one, were they public documents where the permissions were set to such? In this case, yes, they were. They weren't blocked, but as we've seen, especially with Dropbox, have changed some of the rules and how they do things and sharing public folders, and how quickly these things are changing. People by accident are sharing things out, not realizing that they are public or that they can be public. And as we saw in the one case, some things that even are supposed to not be indexed are getting indexed anyway, and so it's one of those quickly changing things where it's very confusing for a normal user.
Or an employee at an organization that may not know any better, and may not know how to configure those settings to make some of the stuff in these cloud documents services private.
Yeah, and where they want to share it out with someone to begin with, and you have to throw it in the public folder anyway to be able to share a link out to somebody, and then not realizing who would ever guess this huge link. Not thinking the Google index that made it easy to find. So one other thing, and this is not so much a tool so much as an update to our main Bing Hacking Dictionary. One thing I want to note is that due to some recent updates in Bing's API, as well as some undocumented or poorly documented features, we have released an updated version, the Bing Hacking Database version 2.0. Before we released our first Bing Hacking Database, Bing or MSM before that was primarily used for footprinting, finding host names, finding applications, or URLs and things like that. And it was primarily for footprinting purposes, and that was because Bing had specifically disabled a handful of features, most notable of which was in URL, which broke like 95% of the Google Hacking Database. And they specifically did it to try to prevent Bing hacking, you know, in the sense of Google hacking. And they did that back in 2007. We released we found some workarounds for that, and we're able to release 1,000 or so queries for the first Bing Hacking Database. But now we're proud to say in the latest version, due to two major updates, we are now for the first time are able to make Bing hacking just as effective as a tool as Google hacking. And that's because, one, Bing decided to enable the ext colon operator to allow you to search by file extension within the last year. So that was one. And two, and this was the big one, like 95% of the Google Hacking database uses this in URL colon operator, which will allow you to specify random text that has to be found in the URL of the results. By using this, and we see it in the screenshot here, in StreamSet colon URL colon in Bing, you effectively get in URL.
And you can do in StreamSet body, in StreamSet title, or other parts of a typical HTTP, or I'm sorry, HTML page. And but we found that using that in StreamSet URL, which is just kind of a footnote in their documentation that we came across, we can revive Bing hacking and make it, as Fran said, just as viable as Google hacking.
And we see in this screenshot this in StreamSet URL and WP config, and you see out there a number of results of people with their WordPress configurations with their database passwords right there in the configuration file. This is a type of query that we would not have been able to do with Bing before now. So with the new version that we released in Bing Diggity, we went from like 1,000 or some odd mildly effective queries to I think like 4,000 to 5,000 queries that are now pulling vulnerability information out of Bing. So kind of exciting. Bing binary malware search. This is one I just want to go over quickly. But any of you guys familiar with H.D. Moore's tool, MW Search, from a few years back?
Where it actually, search engines were indexing PE header info?
Of executable files. Basically, H.D. had a tool that used Google a few years back that allowed you to use Google to find people hosting malware based on searching for the PE header information. Google disabled that feature, so it kind of broke his tool and has been dead ever since. But people didn't realize that Bing does have the ability to do that as well. So, and using, we see here a picture of HD's old signature file, and just throwing that up, being able to find instances of malware via Bing.
We wanted to give something back to always like the malware researchers in the room as well, and so this is something that can be effectively used to identify malware that's indexed by Bing. Although we in our tests we found that it changes very rapidly, right? Because Bing doesn't want to distribute malware; they don't want malware in their results. So as soon as they're identifying them, they're removing them. But it's kind of like a first notice of okay, if I search this, I got this executable file back in the results, and I can identify that as malware based on that meta information like size of code, entry point, number of segments, and other PE or portable executable meta information.
So the results are somewhat limited in being able to find tons of malware at this point. One, due to them removing it, but two, just looking at this, we found some numbers on. It's estimated from these researchers that Google has indexed about 50 billion pages, and Bing has indexed about 3 billion. So, in terms of raw, size does matter. In terms of raw set of what you're looking for, there's just not as many results in Bing as there is in Google for finding things anyway. Although you see in that graph in the last month, it claims that Bing jumped up from 3 billion to about 16 billion.
But they're probably lying.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, they lie all the time. So, I mean, if you ever clicked on it and it says a few hundred thousand results and you go to page two, page three of results, and it's like, okay, maybe there was like 20 results. You know, you got us. You know, page three is the end of it. Who knows how reliable these numbers really are, but...
Yeah, this was actually done by a group that goes out and they do like Zipf's law of statistical analysis, and they go out and search a lot of keywords and basically count the results that come back for those keywords and then try to determine how much is in the index. Kind of using them combined is what we think it works best, both Google and Bing.
Cool. So we got 10 minutes, so we'll speed along. Code Search Diggity, this is what we showed in the intro. It was dead. It's now back. We give the ability to search across. The version that's hooked up on the website right now is just for Google Code Projects, but we'll shortly have everything back up and running. Very soon, but you can at the very least search all Google Code Projects, which is quite a bit. For SQL injection, we see here they're putting a request.query string parameter right into a select statement. So what we would do with this is some trade forum software. We can go out there and find SQL injection and some popular blog software, trade forum software, shopping cart software, and then go to regular Google and do powered by that shopping cart software, something like that. And it's a quick way of doing some blogging software. We found SQL injection. We found it was
like 11,000 sites in China using the blogging software that was vulnerable to SQL injection.
Yeah, so now we can just find the targets. Now we know we would go to the post.asp page and we would tamper with the reply underscore ID parameter, and we know exactly where to go for that for open source code.
And the way we're bringing this back is really by utilizing some freely available cloud services to go out and crawl the data. There's
one thing to note before we get into that is that just with that example with the Amazon cloud hacking that we showed earlier, if you look at it, if any of you guys remember the CIA triad of confidentiality, integrity, and availability, basically Amazon cloud and most cloud services promise you nothing. In fact, they distinctly tell you that we are not guaranteeing you in any way, shape, or form the confidentiality, the integrity, or the availability of your data. You know, take it or leave it kind of thing. So we have to, you know, broker a better deal going forward, as, you know, every employee out there and every corporation is just throwing stuff up in the cloud now.
Just leave that to the legal department.
Yeah. So this is...
So as we were saying, we're bringing back code search by utilizing some of these cloud crawling-based services. And one in particular that I liked we found is 80Legs. And this is a service that you can go and utilize them to do your crawling for you. Even with a free account, they'll do 10,000 pages. And if you, the for pay accounts are just dollars.
For $20, you get like 10 million pages indexed or something in a matter of like an hour.
Right. So we can actually program into this as seed values of where to start crawling and say, go out to GitHub, search for all PHP code, and use that as my seed page. And then I can put in a regular expression to say, find all the links to the next page on that result for all the PHP code and go crawl those pages. So basically it's going to then download all the PHP code from GitHub. And then I can put in some regular expressions to do analysis on that and say, now find me all the uses of include that are also taking in a query string parameter. And now I'm effectively identifying like remote file includes in these open source PHP projects and getting those results back. And so as part of our efforts to make this available through our tool, we're pulling those results into a cloud database that we can expose as a web service that anyone could make calls to effectively query vulnerability information in these open source code projects. And then we're going to have our client be able to call that service so that you can use it in the same old user interface that we always had.
Yeah, so if Google wants to shut it down in favor of making, you know, Google Plus or things like that, we decided to just do it ourselves and, you know, make it searchable.
And this is really just a proof of concept that is something that's really powerful that we identified as a penetration tester. Like I rely on certain tools and I rely on some things to go out and find certain types of information. But if I have a really large scope, I'm going to start turning to services like this to say, go crawl these 10 million pages and do this analysis on them and give me the information back. And now I know I have some really good starting points of where I may want to start probing an entire large organization.
Okay, we got 5 minutes left, so we'll just speed through these last couple. Shodan Diggity. How many of you guys are familiar with Shodan, the search engine?
It indexes the actual headers that come back from a query to various services, HTTP and things like Telnet, SSH, and actually records those and makes them searchable via an index.
Yeah, it's like a search engine for network service banners, more or less. But it's really gotten some headlines in the last couple, the last 6 months, due to SCADA hacking, critical infrastructure, type things. But basically what we're seeing is, you know, finding SCADA systems that are out there. For the first time ever, and this is something I really want to stress, we have SCADA systems which are controlling everything from, the air conditions in buildings to manufacturing plant floors to the electric grid.
The water pump that powers
water pumps,
like the whole
municipalities. And these things have been around for a long time and are very easy to hack. And in the last 6 months, we've seen two major things happen. One, we're seeing point-and-click exploits for the first time ever in Metasploit, where people are making it. You point it at a SCADA system and take control, so you have the ability to exploit easily, as well as, two, the ability for mass identification. Just one Cambridge student putting out a PhD paper, half messing around, found, you see that that map in the middle bottom there, found 10,000 SCADA systems with a handful of Shodan queries connected to the internet. All the red dots as opposed to greens are ones that a public exploit just came out for. So you have tens of thousands of systems that control water pumps to electric grids, all connected to the internet, easily findable by Shodan, and now easily exploitable on that exploit. I'd be surprised in the next year if we didn't see some kind of major disaster of a physical nature.
So we've wired it up into our user interface for and prepackaged it with a lot of useful queries so that you can start targeting networks that you're looking at using the Shodan search engine and get the results back in a nice malleable format.
Yep. And I'll skip the demo for that, but this you could just plug in your Shodan API key, have a bunch of pre queries already for you, and just provide a nice easy interface to use Shodan because we wanted to have one, so we decided to make one. Last, and I know we only have like 2 minutes, and I showed this before, we have this alert DiggityDB. This is what's coming up next, where we have these hundreds of thousands of results we're getting from scraping now. We have 3 years of Google alert feeds and Bing feeds that have been feeding into millions of entries.
Things like 4 million records of vulnerabilities and sensitive information.
They correspond, and every single RSS entry that you see there corresponds to some website on the internet that is vulnerable to something that some Google or Bing dork found. From several years of it. We have it in one table. We put up an Amazon RDS as a cloud-based database that we're going to be making available as soon as I work out the pricing model. But you should see in the next few weeks this available to be able to query this massive repository. So in the future, you won't actually have to go to Google and do Google hacking anymore because we've already done it for you. We've Google hacked. We've Bing hacked. We have several years of results. That is all in one big table that instead of going out and doing Google hacking, you can just plug in and do a single search and pull all the results from several years of Google hacking and come to us instead of Google.
We've actually done this for some of our clients as kind of a custom consulting project and just focused on what was available in search engines and gotten back a lot of really detailed information on what their exposure was. And they appreciated that and were able to take that actionable intelligence and then go do some remediation.
Yep, and we're going to be hooking this up again to some charts and mobile business intelligence apps. So on your iPhone or iPad, you could just hook it up, say, I want to monitor these domains and get a filtered view of this huge, massive repository of vulnerabilities on the internet, which is probably the world's largest single repository of live vulnerabilities on the internet that I'm aware of anyway, unless you guys know of a bigger one, and get a nice little view of that. And this is, as Rob just mentioned, just looking at how you guys can start to analyze some of this information. And this is from DLP, from a tool we did, basically pulling down and, you know, pulling down 13,000 documents using some of our tools.
This was on 54 domains for one of our clients, and they yeah. like couldn't even wrap their head around, like, okay, we have 13,000 documents on these domains. What do we even do to start to analyze this? But we were able to use our DLP tool to start identifying sensitive information in those documents.
Yeah, so that's kind of the very, very quick view. I think we're probably out of time now. But if you guys are interested in some of those other tools that we talked about, you can check out videos. Or if you go to...
Yeah, follow me on Twitter if you want to keep up to date on what we're releasing. So.
The project page is at the bottom right there. All these tools are free for download. The new version is 3.0. It's up on the website right now. There'll probably be some bug fixes and stuff, and that's a pretty fully functional version of all the new tools. Free for download, free for use. Will continue to be free, and it's up on that website.